Hello and welcome to iVow, the podcast program of Voices of Women. I'm Jenny Prisk, the president and founder of VOW, and delighted to be sitting down to have a conversation with Galia Golan of Israel. She is currently in residence as a peacemaker at the Joan B. Kroc Institute for Peace and Justice at the University of San Diego. In addition, she is a professor emerita, an expert in international affairs, and a peace and feminist activist with several decades of experience advancing women's roles in peace building. Galia, it's a delight to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you.
I read that very short bio of yours just now, and I know that that doesn't even scratch the surface of the work that you have done and continue to do in Israel with regard to peace building. Would you elucidate a little more on the organizations you're involved with and how you work to promote peace in Israel?
Well, I was one of the founders and a long, long time leader of the only mass peace movement in Israel, Peace Now. But more recently, and I should add that I also helped found two women's peace groups, the Jerusalem Link, which was Israeli and Palestinian women from both sides of Jerusalem, and later the International Women's Commission for a Just Peace in the Middle East, which were Israeli, Palestinian, and international women under UNIFEM, when there was still UNIFEM at the UN. But and those, the two women's organizations no longer exist. Peace Now certainly does and is quite active. But in recent years, I have shifted gradually to a different organization called Combatants for Peace. And the reason is that I've pretty much come to the conclusion that joint activity between Israelis and Palestinians is perhaps the best way to go. And Combatants for Peace is joint. It's a group of people, Israelis and Palestinians, who have been in the army, some in combat positions. Palestinians have been in violent action. Most of them have sat in Israeli prisons because of violent actions. And it is a joint organization. And their slogan basically is, there is another way. And so what it is they've laid down their arms and they advocate nonviolent activity and, of course, nonviolent activity towards the end of the occupation, the creation of two states side by side. Basically, the idea being to demonstrate that Palestinians and Israelis can work together, that there is a partner on the other side, and that it can be done. And I'm also part of the steering committee of another joint organization that's called the Forum of Peace NGOs, Israeli and Palestinian peace organizations. These are umbrella organizations. So I'm active in that as well, and in a Palestine-Israel journal. I'm on the editorial board. Again, a joint activity, a little bit more intellectual. It's an actual journal we publish. So I see that as the way to go, and certainly the way I'm focusing my activity these past few years.
That's a busy agenda. I can tell just from listening to the numbers of the organizations. Do you feel as though you're making progress?
No.
It's a very honest answer. And what would well, let me just add, yes, no is a good answer, but I just want you to follow on.
I have to explain, of course.
I understand that you do. What does progress look like so that we can balance both sides?
We've often wondered if we've had any impact over the years, because we've been at it a long time. I mean, probably around 40 years, if not more. And we don't have peace. And so technically, not only have we not had any progress, we see retrograde situation where we have today a very right-wing government in Israel, which keeps getting reelected, and we can talk about that later. We seem to be further from peace today than we were certainly 15, 20 years ago, when there was a great deal of hope. If we measure progress in other terms, and we often try to see, and I have often actually tried to see in my writing and research, have we made a dent? And I think we have, in the sense that, first of all, today the majority of both publics support a two-state solution and living side by side. Well, that was certainly not the case 40 years ago. It wasn't the case 30 years ago. And I think we had something to do with bringing this issue and possibility to the into the public discourse, getting it on the agenda, demonstrating to the government, at least on our side, that there was a public in favor of this. Now, I can't say we had played the only role. Obviously, many things contributed to the changes. But the situation today in terms of public opinion is very different on both sides. Our major problem today, of course, is that since we had hopes at one point at the period of the Oslo Accords, which were an interim agreement, and then the collapse of that effort and more negotiations that failed, most of the public in Israel and in Palestine want to see a two-state solution, but believe it's not possible, that there's no partner on the other side, which, if I go back to my earlier comments about working jointly with Palestinians, is one of the reasons that we feel that we have to work together to demonstrate that there is a partner. And one of our major efforts today is to try to bring hope back, to bring people to believe once again that it is possible to reach an agreement and it is possible to end the occupation and end the conflict. And that's really our biggest task today.
Mm-hmm. That is a mammoth task. Now, just coming to San Diego and your role here as one of four women peacemakers in residence in the city for 8 weeks, you are invited to go and speak to a number of groups, and I have no doubt that you deliver your message about the two-state solution. How is that being received locally?
Well, surprisingly, I haven't heard any kind of opposition, and I've spoken quite often in Europe and in the United States, and usually there'll be somebody almost hysterical from either side, and there will be opposition, Jewish from the Jewish public thinking that I'm being too critical in public, from the Palestinian public thinking I'm not being critical enough. That there hasn't been any of that. There has just been one minor comment, and basically I've found the audiences to be very receptive and the questions very perceptive. Really touching on the hard issues of, you know, how do you deal with so many years of hostility, and some very practical questions about possible resolution. So I found it to be people to be very, very receptive. And one of the nicer things, but that does often happen, happened the other day when we spoke at the community college, when we were speaking to students, quite a large group of students. And a Palestinian woman got up and asked a question, and it was a very sort of a question that was in place and certainly moderate. Mm-hmm. And both she and a Jordanian who was teaching there came to me afterwards, and clearly they had responded to what I had to say and shared with me rather than sought to confront me in any way. So I found that very rewarding. And one of the reasons is that I think that the image of Israel abroad is, of course, basically disseminated by our government and our policies, and I can't deny that. And these are not popular, and they're not popular for good reason. And so we are not usually received very well, and most people have not heard another point of view, an Israeli point of view, a totally legitimate, I would say also mainstream, Israeli point of view from the peace camp. And so that, I think, has probably been the most important part of this, whether we were talking to young people and we've spoken to high school students or others, foreign students here on campus. I think it's important that they hear this rather than that sort of polarized Palestinian or position or polarized extreme Jewish student position. I think it's extremely important, and very often I have appeared in the United States on campuses together with the Palestinian, so that they can see. I think that the polarization doesn't help. It really, when you get a one-sided view, it just raises the ire of the other side, and then you start clashing. That doesn't help anybody. It really doesn't help. It doesn't help the cause, in quotes. And when we can find that we can speak together, appear together, I think that's far more valuable. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the message that has to go out.
It's interesting that you would say that, mention the polarization, because I think that is where most of the reading public in America sits or stands with regard to this situation. And we have it not only in the US government, of course, but as you say, in your conservative government in Israel. How much support do you have to gain from other factions and organizations back in Israel to move anything forward if the government is so stymied?
The bottom line, of course, is not so much changing public opinion, because public opinion on both sides wants to see an end of the occupation and an end of the conflict. People really, Israelis, don't pay very much attention to the occupation, unless, of course, we have an uprising as we're having now. But by and large, people are concerned with the cost of living and other issues altogether. What we have to do is to change the vote, because public opinion polls are fine. We have no problem there. The problem is getting people to vote in a different way. And I want to explain this a little bit. I think the public in Israel is basically in the center. And it goes to the left or the right in every election, and even every past election in recent years. The two camps, so to speak, are very close in numbers. In other words, the center could go with the left or with the right and create a coalition government. But what has happened is, in my opinion, in any case, what has happened is that because people have lost hope, and you've got this very strong and very broad, broadly held sentiment that there is no partner on the other side, peace is impossible, we have to live by the sword, as Netanyahu said the other day. If we have to live by the sword and no solution is possible, then we need a strong government. And it's security and the government, the right-wing parties play on that, on fear. And that's why the electorate goes a little bit more in that direction. That's why the center will go more to the right than to the left. So we know that one of the things we have to do is to address very legitimate fears that the Arabs will never make peace with us, they won't accept us, and so forth, because the government manipulates the fears. And they're very real fears amongst the Israeli public. I mean, we have centuries of persecution, much less the Holocaust, and many years where none of the Arab states would speak to us or recognize us. Now, the situation changed, and we have to persuade people, which Yitzhak Rabin tried to do in all his speeches, to tell Israelis this is a different world today. This is not what it used to be. And he actually said, we are not alone as we once were.
This was Rabin.
Yitzhak Rabin in his very first speech when he was elected in 1992, just before Oslo. And because he understood that you have to change this mindset in Israel. And unfortunately, the failure, repeated failures in the peace talks, and then the violence, tremendous violence on both sides, has had terrible effect on both sides. And so much of what we have to do is to address that electorate that's in the center that can go either way. And that's our main task. I also think that the electorate can be affected by what goes on outside. Israelis don't like to be isolated in the world, and they also don't like to be in a situation of, let's say, problematic relations with the United States. We're dependent upon the United States. I mean, really totally dependent. And there have been times in the past where Israel's recalcitrance on the peace issue has led to American pressure and a deterioration in American-Israeli relations, and the public often responds to that. Mm-hmm. So this can play a role. I think the pressure from the United States can play a role. It has to be measured, it has to be carefully applied so you don't scare everybody and simply feed Netanyahu's fear-mongering. But we have seen American pressure work in the past, and I think we need it now. Not necessarily to change this government's policies, because this government, I don't think, will change its policies, but to change the center in Israel to get them to believe that peace is possible and that it's necessary and maybe the next election we can make a change.
Mm-hmm. Are you surrounded predominantly in your support, in the support from the number of groups that you work with to forge this path to peace? Are you surrounded primarily by males or females or a mix of both?
In all of the peace movements, there are a tremendous number of young people, always young people coming in, which is absolutely fantastic, and that gives me hope.
Yes.
The younger generation. I can't say what percentage of all young people are with us, but it's wonderful that all these movements and many, many more, little ones, and they're out there doing things all the time, are moved really forward by the young people. And, of course, women. Women are well known to be very active in extra-parliamentary movements with the people on the ground or women. And the movements I've been involved with have always been women and men. Very often the men get the attention and they're up there on the stage speaking. But there's been changes. We've been making changes in that over the years so that today they think twice before they have only men speaking. And even in Combatants for Peace, and there's a sort of a sister organization of bereaved families, Palestinian and Israelis, who've lost people in the conflict. And they, too, are men and women. And so when there's a joint event, as we do a joint memorial every year for those who have fallen in this conflict, and there are always women equally speaking and appearing, there's much greater consciousness of it. And it's also clear that the conflict affects women and men differently, but certainly all of us are affected.
Yes, very much so. Do you think you'll see the two-state solution in your lifetime?
I don't know. It seems very far away, but it is, first of all, the only solution, and I think people have to realize that. And we also have to realize, and this is certainly what we try to drive home, is that the alternative is a certainty of continued violence and bloodshed and wars and rockets and terrorism. It's an absolute certainty, and everybody knows that. It's a question of what conclusions you draw from it. And my conclusion, or our conclusion, is that we must end the occupation and reach a peace agreement. There's no guarantee that that's going to end all the perhaps hatred or all of the efforts or desire for revenge. But I have often said, and I fully believe, and for years and years and years, that peace is a gamble. It's a gamble, but the alternative is an absolute certainty. We will find ourselves facing repeated war and repeated bloodshed, and also we will be ruling over another people. And the word for that is apartheid. And I think people like Yitzhak Rabin and even some right-wing leaders like Arik Sharon and Ehud Olmert, who were also prime ministers but from the right, they realized exactly that point, that to continue the occupation is not in our interest. Now, they may have felt it's morally wrong as well, but they also saw that it's destroying Israel, and it will destroy Israel.
And then there'll be no hope at that point for any of this peace work or this peace promotion if it destroys Israel.
We are Israeli movements, or Israeli and Palestinian. But by definition, we support two states existing, not a Palestinian state in all of what was Palestine, and certainly not continued Israeli control over the occupied territories. The fact that the Palestinian leadership agreed to give up the old goal and go for the two-state solution, a much smaller state. And then there was a period where it seemed that Israel was also willing, that the publics are both willing to have a two-state solution. And the blueprints are out there. There's been so many meetings and so much effort. We know what a solution is going to look like. We know what the agreement's going to look like. We know that there are difficult issues, the most difficult being what are we going to do about the Jewish settlers in the occupied territories. But generally, and I believe that aside from the fact that it would be very difficult to move settlers, the rest of it will be relatively easy. And the reason I think it will be easy is that all of the polls have demonstrated and they're consistent, and they've been done by very serious people over very large numbers of public respondents. If you bring a package of whole peace agreement, and we know, as I say, what it will look like, if you bring that to people, and the Palestinians are convinced that the occupation will end and they'll have an independent state, and Israelis are persuaded that we're going to have an end of the conflict, they accept it. The majority on both sides accept it. And that's why, actually, that's sort of what keeps me going, is that I know that if we can get a government that will go for it, the public will accept it. The publics on both sides are finished with this conflict. They want it over.
Yes, and it always comes to the people in the final moment, I think. And as the anthropologist Margaret Mead once said, never doubt that a small group of people can change the world. So as a final question to you, unfortunately final, because I could keep asking you questions for many more hours, you mentioned that you've had a good reception to your presentations about the two-state solution, etc. So just as a final question, what should we as American people be doing to work toward that solution and to the ultimate peace at the end of that, we would hope?
Well, as I said, I believe that the United States has a great deal of influence over Israel, and I truly would like to see them exercise that influence.
And how? I'm sure you're going to tell me.
I think it has to be very careful. I have heard people say you've got to stop selling any arms to Israel. Well, it isn't arms that are making the wars, it's the people holding them. And if Israel is without arms, first of all, they'll buy them somewhere else. We'll make them. But also will feel really exposed. So I just don't see that as the answer. I do think that pressure can be there. And there was pressure. That's how we got a peace agreement with Egypt. Mm-hmm. When the talks broke down, the Americans brought pressure. They delayed a new contract, and they know how to bring pressure. I do think that can be one of the demands of an American public is, I would say if you're not going to bring pressure as a U.S. government, then I have said to people in Washington, then don't do anything. Stop holding the Europeans back. The Europeans, the French, for example, wanted to bring and want to bring a resolution to the Security Council that would outline the peace plan, which everybody knows, and put a time limit on it, get a new resolution from the Security Council. We fully support it. The United States has stopped them. They just recently, the French wanted to propose an international monitoring group on the Temple Mount, in Jerusalem, the holy places, which are very, very sensitive. The United States stopped them. The EU, fortunately, has come out in favor of boycotting products from the settlements. Stop supporting the settlements, for goodness sake. And the United States is always holding them back. So if you're not going to help, and the U.S. has helped tremendously in the past, mm-hmm. and we need them, but if you're not going to be constructive, then let the Europeans do what they want to do. And I think part of what has to be understood here is the Palestinians chose a nonviolent path. Abu Mazen chose a nonviolent path. Go to the UN, go to the international institutions. And he is holding people back from using violence because he knows it isn't very helpful. At least it has been harmful in the past. And yet America is stopping him at everywhere. And so I think that, you know, well, the slogan of J Street here in the United States is a pro-peace position is a pro-Israel position. To be pro-peace is to be pro-Israel. And I think that's true. It doesn't help to be, as some people are, as I spoke about polarization before, you know, anti-Israel in the sense that Israel has no right to exist and we're evil and so forth. Nor does it help to say the Palestinians just want to push the Jews into the sea and they're totally uncompromising. Mm-hmm. What we need is an effort that shows that what we need is peace, and a pro-Palestinian position is exactly the same as a pro-Israel position, and that's a position that says we must end the occupation, we must end the conflict, and it can be done. And that's what we need from outside.
very powerful words on which to conclude our conversation. Galia Golan, thank you very much for joining iVow this afternoon.
Thank you.